Nowhere in the pages of history can one find a greater champion of justice. Return with us now to those thrilling days of yesteryear.
And I'll tell you something else, too, is I cannot stand sissies.
You're going to talk about wrestling, that's redneck talk.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Dragon King Carl Classic Wrestling Audio Show here at WrestlingObserver.com. Figure4Online.com, I'm your host, Carl Stern. Thanks a lot for listening to the show. We're back. This show's a little bit later than I normally would have wanted to. Just scheduling conflicts galore this past week. I've just got a lot on my plate, and it's been a very busy week with adventures in my other job. And just doctor's appointment and life and things like that just kind of delayed this show a few days. But we're here now. And on the last show, I asked for let's reinvigorate the mailbag again, the mailbag at Carl at DragonKingCarl.com. Asked for some suggestions for the show, get the conversation restarted again. And it was a great success. I got a lot of emails, got a lot of good quality emails, got a lot of people corresponding with me on Twitter and social media and giving their thoughts, and really appreciate it. And so much, I mean, so many people were so very much feeling exactly the way I said I felt on that last show, where, you know, wrestling has... You know, and I'm not going to reiterate the whole rant and the whole topic. You can go back and listen to it yourself. But, you know, there's it's obvious from the demographics of the ratings for wrestling that wrestling has passed us by. They are not or haven't been promoting to the people watching the show. And new, younger audience isn't coming. Wrestling's not cool. It's not the hip thing. It's not pop culture popular. It's not people, kids in school aren't talking about it. It's, you know, UFC, I mean, MMA's the same way. I mean, it's something that appeals to an older audience, and the demographics say exactly what I've thought for a long time, which is wrestling fans are people like me. I'm 44 years old, and so I know what my story is. I started watching wrestling in the 80s when it was really popular. As a kid, larger than life, exciting, there were still territories around. So many people have written in telling me their same feelings about, you know, how it's Saturday morning, I'd sit down, and the first thing I'd do is watch, you know, world-class wrestling, and then an hour later, I'd turn the channel, and I'd watch Georgia Championship Wrestling, then I'd turn the channel and watch WWF Challenge, and then I'd turn the station and watch WCW Worldwide or NWA Worldwide, or whatever my local was, be it Memphis, be it Continental, be it Central States, be it Pacific Northwest, whatever demographic you lived in. And then, you know, Saturday afternoon, you'd sit around and talk about it with your friends, and different people would like different people from different organizations. Some guy would say, yeah, but what if Hulk Hogan faced Jerry Lawler? Or what if, you know, Ric Flair took on, you know, Rick Martel, or whatever the case may be, and you had all these dream matches and arguments and with your friends, and it spurred the imagination. And then we got older as we started going out, graduating high school and going off to college and getting in the workforce, wrestling, it took a downturn. And, you know, I now look back and wonder if there isn't a little more to that. I always just said, you know, wrestling got, it was a combination of things. It really was a combination of things. It was creative, turned really bad in WWF. I mean, they were doing some of the most silly, cartoonish, intelligence insulting, just, I mean, kindergarten level characters and stuff like that. The territories had completely fallen apart. They'd been raided, went out of business, went belly up, merged together and whatever. So the variety evaporated. And so, but I think one thing that's been kind of overlooked is I think a lot of us, the hardcore fan base, went away and started living life. We started, you know, going to work for a living. Maybe you got married. Maybe you had a kid. Maybe you went to college. Maybe, you know, whatever. You started living life and didn't have that much time for this stuff. And so I think a little bit of wrestling's popularity fade there in the early 90s, maybe not as much so as the poor creative and just the fall of the territories and stuff, but to some degree, I think we, the fans, went away. And then if you notice the timing of it, the mid-1990s, 95, when you have ECW kind of starting to rise in popularity, you have, you know, WCW, then 96 and 97 with the Attitude Era and Nitro being red hot and ECW being so underground, that's about the time that we were kind of settling into what we were going to do. We were settling into our jobs. We were settling into our family life. And so, you know, most of us came home after work on a Monday, sat down and watched the Monday Night Wars. And we came back because it fit into our life again. And at that time, they got it right. They were promoting to our age demographic, which at that point in time was early to mid-20s, maybe even some people later 20s, but your 20-year-olds, your 20-somethings. And wow, wrestling was hot, man. T-shirts, NWO shirts, Stone Cold Steve Austin shirts. You couldn't go to a, you know, the mall, a club, somewhere to eat without seeing, you know, Austin 316 shirts or NWO shirts, because we were the ones wearing them. We were the demographic that all, you know, every advertising agency aims at. Because we were out there working, had the money, were the ones watching television, and ratings reflected that. The Attitude Era reflected that. The NWO Era reflected that. The Nitro, all that stuff. ECW certainly reflected that. We were out there in the prime of our life, man, and we were wrestling fans when we were kids, and now this was a lot of the people that were stars were nostalgia-based. Hulk Hogan, Scott Hall, Kevin Nash, all this were people that we knew a little bit from right there, you know, that had come along. They kind of grew up along with us. Randy Savage back, you know, so we had that to go on. Well, wrestling didn't keep up with us. After that, after WCW imploded through mechanisms of their own design, and what happened next was terrible. WWE got lazy. TNA came along and tried to be WCW 2.0 with neither the money nor the exposure to do so. They had ran that ship into the ground, and wrestling fans by the millions fled and never came back. So many millions of people that regularly watched WWF and WCW Nitro on Monday nights in the 2000s went away, and we haven't seen them since. The story for them was over. It was written. And WWE has been struggling ever since. Ratings are, quite frankly, compared to the Monday Night Wars, abysmal. WWE is in a sound financial condition through a lot of smart business decisions, diversifying their revenue streams. The network looks was really forward thinking, I think, more so than people give it credit for. Early adopters. One day the network and internet streaming will be so ingrained in our culture that it will be second nature. And I think they were wise to get in on the ground floor of that. And if they stay up to or just slightly ahead of what the technology's doing, I think they're in a good place for that. So business-wise, WWE's made some smart moves, but it's been, they've taken their eye off the ball creatively. Now, this past Monday night with the return of Shane McMahon, there's some possibilities there. I mean, that one person nobody's really thought that much about in a while. There's all kinds of possibilities you could do. I was reading some fan booking, I guess, for lack of a better word, on Twitter. And some guy, and you know, a lot of this, I'm sure I have no faith in them making it happen. Some of it may physically cannot even happen. But it's great to hear the conversation again. It's great to hear people fantasy booking and having dream matches. One scenario I saw was, and this thing to me didn't make much sense. I'm like, well, why would, what's in this for the Undertaker? Why would the Undertaker wrestle Shane McMahon? It really doesn't make a lot of sense, and maybe they'll explain it. But one person said, you know what would be great is if the Undertaker comes out and says exactly that, says, why am I wrestling Shane McMahon? Said, no, I don't care. I have nothing to do with this. I'm not wrestling him. And so Shane McMahon then sides with the Undertaker, and Vince has to get Vince or the family, Triple H, Stephanie, whoever, has to get somebody else to face the Undertaker, and they bring in a just returned off injury, now for the first time ever a heel, John Cena. Man, that's a business-popping deal right there in front of 100,000 people in Dallas. You've got new heel John Cena siding as with Vince and the Authority against Undertaker and Shane McMahon, and Shane, with the stake of Monday Night Raw up for grabs, and have Undertaker win. And so Shane gets control and gets to bring up some NXT people, gets to put a fresh coat of paint on this. I mean, none of that may happen, but that's fun just to think about. That brings a spark of energy back to wrestling. And by the time you hear this show, maybe, well, I guess this is, I'm putting it up the same day I'm recording it. I imagine we're probably still where we were in the overall scheme of things, but still it's very interesting. And WWE creatively has been in the doldrums for so long. And again, it didn't grow with us. But now it has the chance to. Now it has the chance to get out of this. People my age, of course they want to see a heel John Cena. Of course they do. We've been booing that guy for forever. You know, his transparent, corny character. You know, there's lots to hate about him. And it would be fun to have a heel John Cena and to see Undertaker come back and, you know, a year older and he's already lost WrestleMania once. Hey, it's very possible he could lose again, especially to John Cena. Now you got the Shane McMahon in. There's all kinds of stuff you could do to appeal to a guy my age who is the myself and people 5 years either direction of my age are the main people watching this stuff. We're the ones who have been working for 20 years now, have some expendable income. We're the ones paying the $9.99 for the network. You need to be appealing to us. You need to be giving us what we want. And I've really had lots and lots of confirmation about that through the mailbag. And today we're going to jump into the mailbag and talk about some of that. I am building up some of the questions, so if I don't get to your question today, just hold on. I will get to your question, provided it's not a bunch of negative nonsense. I will get to your question. But I'm trying to let it build up a little bit. So, and I like to take my time with the questions too, and not just, you know, short, concise answers with nothing behind it. We'll like to talk about it. And so again, I give you the email address for the show is carl@dragonkingcarl.com. That is Carl with the letter K, K-A-R-L @dragonkingcarl.com. And here on the show, we talk all about pro wrestling history, the legends of professional wrestling, all about it. We go off topic, talk about a lot of different stuff, just wherever the conversation takes us. Interspersed with these shows, also do biographies occasionally. And last July, I did 31 biographies in 31 days. And you can, if you don't have those, you can download those from my website. It's a $5 digital download. If you buy the Super Stern Stick flash drive, which I sell, they're included already on there. For new purchases. And this July, I will be doing another Classic Wrestling Marathon where I'll do 31 biographies in 31 days. So we head toward that. I know we're still a few months away, but I want to plant that seed in your mind because we are, it'll be here before we know it, probably. Before I get to the email, I want to tell you about a new gadget I got. I know we talk tech sometimes on this show, and usually I do it in the last segment. Promise not to take up too much time on it. But I do want to let you know that I love this new device I've got. It's called an Amazon Echo. And a lot of you may be aware of it, and a lot of you may not be. But if you go to Amazon.com, they're really pushing it. I encourage you, actually, if you intend to buy one, to please go to my website, DragonKingCarl.com, and I've put a banner for it at the very top. You can't miss it. It's for the Amazon Echo. And if you buy it through my website, I get a little commission from Amazon. It doesn't cost you anything extra. It comes out of Amazon's end, but I would appreciate that. If you do decide to buy an Echo, please use my link to do so. It helps me with upkeep of my site. Again, that's DragonKingCarl.com. But I love this thing. It's a voice automated personal assistant. And so a lot of people have been telling people about this gadget and whatever, and a lot of people say, well, that sounds exactly like Siri on the iPhone or whatever. And I'm like, yeah, you know, it does sound a lot like it, but it's not. It's like leaps and bounds. I will say I use Siri a lot, and especially because I drive a lot for a living. I'm driving. I use the voice auto activation feature. If I get a text message or something like that, I just go, hey, Siri, read that last message. And then it auto reads it to me. And then I can even voice respond if it's something necessary to respond to. Well, I can tell you, you know, and for those of you who have Apple products and use Siri, you know, I would say half the time it gets it wrong. That's probably a little much. I would say, but realistically, 1 out of 4 times it's going to get something wrong, and lots of stuff it doesn't know, lots of stuff it's incapable of doing. Well, Amazon Echo is much better. The voice activation on it is 1,000 times better than Siri. It seldom ever where it misunderstands me the most is in song titles and lyrics or song titles. And this thing's great because if you're an Amazon Prime member and they have that Prime Music, it will voice automated play your Prime. Spotify, if you're a Spotify premium user like I am, and Spotify has so much more music, you can tell it to play a song or a playlist off of Spotify and it plays it through there too. Not to mention answers questions, just all kinds of cool stuff, weather, news. And they're adding a lot more stuff to it. It's really awesome. It really is. I don't know if you can hear it. I'm in the same room as it is, but we'll see if I can get it to do something. The wake word on it is Alexa. And so I say that kind of low because I didn't want it to hear me. But I'll say, like, Alexa, tell me the news.
Here's your flash briefing. In CNN News, Ramon Castro has died at age 91. The older brother of Fidel, 89.
Alexa, stop. So there you go. I don't know if you could hear that well, but yeah, it's apparently Fidel Castro's brother died today. Alexa, what's the weather? Alexa, stop. Yeah, it's cold, rainy, and miserable outside today. So, and like music. Alexa, play Rush.
Shuffling Rush.
I don't know if you can hear that. It's kind of started off kind of low. Alexa, stop. Alexa, play Rush on Spotify. It's just started back my Prime. Sometimes with music especially, it gets a little, it misunderstands like song titles. Alexa, stop. And you can buy smart gadgets to go along with it, like turn your lamps on and off. In fact, probably this week I'm going to order a plug-in that I can turn the lamps on and off in my bedroom by voice activation. But it's a really cool thing. Look, go on YouTube, watch some videos where people review it. It's really awesome. And again, if you're interested in that, please buy it through my website at DragonKingCarl.com. Very much appreciate you doing that. I'm loving this thing. I'm all kind of, Alexa, who is Brian Alvarez? Alexa, stop. I use this thing all the time to spell stuff and to get, you know, multiple. I'm terrible with math. I'll be like, yeah, multiply whatever by whatever. And say, Alexa, who is Dave Meltzer?
Dave Meltzer is a David Allen. Dave Meltzer is an American journalist covering professional wrestling and mixed martial arts.
Alexa, stop. So, anyway, there you go. Having a little fun with that and really, really love that. And again, if you're going to order one, DragonKingCarl.com, please. All right, let's jump into the mailbag here. Several things. Let's see. This is from James in Missouri City, Texas. Not sure if I've ever been to Missouri City, Texas or not. I'm sure what part of the state. I've been all over Texas many times, but don't recall ever being to Missouri City. James says, the recent podcast about Archie Goldie reminded me of a couple of spots that happened in Houston. This would be somewhere in the mid-1970s. First, when Paul Bosch was celebrating his 25th or 30th TV anniversary, I can't remember which, he was holding this beautifully decorated cake for the TV audience to see. Stomper came up wanting to eat it, and in the scuffle, Paul ended up with cake dumped all over him. He did the remainder of the broadcast covered in cake icing. Yeah, who didn't see that coming, right? Second was a match where the Mongolian Stomper's manager, J.J. Dillon, faced Gino Hernandez with Stomper suspended above the ring in a small cage. The funny thing about it was that Stomper would give instructions to J.J. as to what to do. I believe the finish involved Stomper throwing his boot down to J.J. and Gino getting KO'd with it. Fun times back then. So great memories of the Mongolian Stomper. Again, since his death, I've been going on YouTube and watching a lot of the old stuff he was involved in. And, man, I loved him as a heel as a kid. He was just such a scary-looking guy. Okay, here is a very interesting, very thought-provoking question here that we should really spend some time with. And this actually made me think, and I hate to keep plugging my Amazon Echo, but I just got the thing. And it's awesome. It reads your Kindle books to you. Yeah. If you've got a Kindle book, like I've been listening to my Stan Hansen book this morning, just sitting here, you know, I've read the book a couple times, but it's great just to have it playing in the background, and I'll walk through it and I'll go, oh yeah, I remember that part of it. And That's great. So if you've got a big Kindle book collection like I do, it also does Audible if you have an Audible subscription. But if you've got Kindle books, most of them, not all of them, but I'd say a good 90% of them, it'll read to you. And keep up with it. I mean, you know, if you're wherever you're at in the book on your device, it'll pick up right there. And it's just, technology is just awesome. All right, this is from Pellegro. Legro meaning hazard in Spanish. Let's see here. He says, I sent this question to the Wrestling Observer mailbag, but I'm also interested in your opinion on this controversial matter. This is a great question, by the way. I've been collecting the New Japan on Access shows on my DVR, and this week after watching Bryan Danielson's retirement, I put on some New Japan Pro Wrestling from the Tokyo Dome from last year. I'm watching Nakabe versus Ishii, and I find myself hoping that this strong style stuff finally becomes passé. Why do pro wrestling insiders insist on applauding this style in which the workers clearly pride themselves on hurting themselves and each other? Given the fact that this business is a work, and as insiders we clearly value work rate and artistry above most everything else, when and how did we become convinced that working stiff was some sort of badge of honor to be respected over working safe? Why did we get caught up in the idea that working as stiff as possible, for example, strong style, was something that should be applauded and or respected? If this business is staged combat, then shouldn't those who work the safest or lightest be most worthy of our respect? No offense intended, but over the years, the Observer and Figure Four have both occasionally been unabashed supporters of stiff work. How do you now address the fact that you have openly praised the stiffest and most dangerous style of pro wrestling now that it is proving to be such a recklessly dangerous version of the art form? I have immense respect for everyone involved with this site, but it is a question I feel is relevant, and I think you all deserve an opportunity to answer this query. So Pellegro has has asked a very good question. I mean, it's a very good self-examining question, because I will be the first to admit I'm guilty of this. I loved good, stiff, hard style wrestling. Now, I'm not so much up on the New Japan stuff currently. Yes, I do watch some of it. If I hear Dave and Brian or whoever, really Mike, whoever, really praising a great New Japan match, I'll go look it up, but I don't consistently keep up with it, you know, every single show that goes on. But I was a huge fan of that All Japan stuff in the 1990s, and it was way stiffer than this. I've said many times on my show, on this show, some of my favorite wrestlers are Stan Hansen and Steve Dr. Death Williams and Terry Gordy and Big Van Vader and Kento Kobashi and Mitsuharu Misawa. And, you know, this is a list of the stiffest, most reckless, you know, head-dropping. I mean, Misawa died from a broken neck off a simple suplex, probably because he had taken so much damage over the year from being repeatedly dropped on his head. I mean, died in the middle of a ring. So this is a very, with Bryan Danielson's situation and all the stuff that's come to light and all the information we've since gleaned about Chris Benoit, who was a poster boy for this same type style, it's a very relevant question and a very difficult question. Okay, and again, I have loved this style of stuff. I love a good stiff. One of my favorite matches, Stan Hansen versus Big Van Vader, the eyeball match over there. And, you know, I can't disagree with a thing you've said in this email. One of the people that always took that approach that, you know, guys, you're doing it wrong, was Bret Hart. And I have, on this show, admittedly said, I was never that big a Bret Hart fan. I always found him kind of bland and boring. Found his work very mechanical, and he was also pretty doggone safe and prided himself on that. I remember back in the Monday Night Wars era, this was just before the Monday Night War era, Hulk Hogan caught absolute utter hell from Wrestling Insiders for a comment he made. I want to say it was to Mark Marrow, Johnny B. Badd at the time, where he essentially said, you're doing too much. Something about he was taping up some ankle or something like that. And he was like, you know. And so Hulk Hogan was getting real, real criticized because Hulk Hogan had a reputation of being pretty lazy as a worker. Well, was he really, or was he just the guy that was extremely popular, knew what worked? I mean, his, you know, his big foot, his leg drop, cup the ear, his sucky punches. If you're in Japan, you might occasionally get a suplex or an axe bomber. It wasn't a hard, high impact style. I mean, Hulk Hogan could punch me all day long and I'd let him. I mean, he's one of the lightest punchers out there. And, you know, I'm not so sure he didn't have it kind of right. Whereas, I mean, look, it was, we all sat around and marveled as Chris Benoit flew off the top rope, you know, Dynamite Kid flying off the top rope, just sacrificing his body. How'd that end up? How'd that turn out? And I wish we could claim ignorance, but come on. Maybe about the brain trauma stuff, maybe about that, we weren't as observant as we should have been, and more information has come out, and we maybe shouldn't judge ourselves too hard about it, but we knew these men were destroying their bodies. Whether it had anything to do with their brain or not, we knew they were doing serious injury to themselves. So how do we feel about that? I mean, you know, Pellegro's right. I mean, he's just right. Everything he said here is right. Now, a lazy way of coming back, I think, and fighting this, say, well, they know what they're doing to themselves. Come on. That's a cheap way out. Just because somebody's willing to do that to themselves in exchange for money, doesn't mean that you should sit there and revel in it and watch. I mean, that's just lowest common denominator stuff. And wrestling has a hard enough time as it is. Now, you can make the same argument for MMA, and you can make the same argument for boxing and professional football and all that. And those are all very good questions that need to be asked, you know. Smash mouth football was a terminology that was used for many years for a reason. The old black and blue league in the NFL, there was something about the ideal of toughness, of guys being tough and able to take this and push through it, that, you know, in a very meta level, that is admirable. You know, a guy who pushes through pain and adversity, and quite frankly, you know, and I don't know where Pellegro's from, what his country of origin is, but I hate to be one of those stodgy old bastards that sit around here in the U.S. and say, yeah, and our youngins could use a little more of that same attitude nowadays. I really feel that way. I really feel like some of our country should toughen the hell up and get up and you know, push forward through a little adversity instead of sitting around crying about it all the time. But when we're talking about entertainment, you know, and he brings up a great point here too about, you know, if they were doing this in a movie, this would never fly. This would never, you know, if they were actually literally hitting each other in the face as hard as they could and dropping each other on their head in a choreographed action movie, we would think they were idiots. Just who would do that with the way filmography is and the way special effects work and as many great action movies we've seen over the years that didn't involve that, we would think these people were absolute idiots and nobody had watched that. But for some reason, when they do it in wrestling, and look, I'm all for it looking more realistic. I like for it to look real. I like to not have to try so hard to suspend my disbelief in watching wrestling. But I don't know that that means hit some guy as hard as you can, hit some guy in the head with a chair, drop some guy on top of his head. And WWE has done a lot about cleaning this up. They really have. And you can be negative on WWE about a lot of things, and rightfully so. But they really have taken steps over the last few years to make things safer. And it's a work in progress, but I think you've got to, at some point in time, stop and give the devil its due and say, okay, look, there have been improvements made and good job, keep going. But we're talking about like the New Japan style. And again, I don't want to pick out specific names and criticize this specific person because quite frankly, I'm ignorant to do so. Maybe I should have Mike Sempervivi on this show and we should talk about this because he's going to better know the names, more responsible for that. All I do is occasionally watch the show. I do like Tanahashi. I think he's a very charismatic guy. I love to watch him work. I don't even know really if he's one of the guys guilty of doing this so much as some of the others are, but you know, it's a very valid question, and I'd love to hear some more feedback on it and what you think. For me, it's as simple, as shallow, and superficial as I just like my wrestling to look real, but I think there's safe ways to do that. Playgro, it's a great question, and thank you for sending it in. Okay, let's take our mid-show break here. When we come back, we'll take at least a couple more questions here on the Dragon King Carl Classic Wrestling Audio Show. And again, the email address for the show is carl@dragonkingcarl.com. That's Carl with the letter K. KARL@DragonKingCarl.com. You can follow me on Twitter as Dragon King Carl, but please primarily go check out my website, DragonKingCarl.com, and pick up a Super Stern stick if you're so inclined, digital download of the biographies, or again, if you want a Amazon Echo, please use my link to get it. And we'll get Alexa to play us out. Alexa, play Rush from my... There we go. Right into it.
Well, David, Rick, there we saw it from Dr. Joseph Iwanek, Charlotte, North Carolina, and I know you took a look at it as well as we did, a very serious injury. Very serious.
A moment ago, we had a tendency to start hollering at each other.
That's right.
So let's just tone this down and tell it like it is. This is professional wrestling. It's the most grueling sport of all professional sports. I am the world's heavyweight champion. I don't cry.
Again.
I've been stabbed. I've been hit by chairs. I've been beat up by everybody.
What's the matter?
But the bottom line is,
all we ask.
I'm talking right now. Let me tell you something. If you like talking to me on this show, you'll let me talk when I'm out here.
The question.
The bottom line for these people right here is, if you're a man, you don't cry about it. You take life the ups and downs. If you're a real man, you never go down. You just stay up. That's why I'm the world champion. That's why this sport coat costs $800, and that costs $200. And I don't know what that costs. I'd be ashamed to wear it. That's why I'm wearing lizard shoes and a Rolex watch, and I got a limousine sitting out there a mile long with 25 women just dying for me to go, woo, because I'm the world champion, sucker. And I don't care if you and your brother are the strongest promotion in the world. Nobody's going to take this from me unless it's done in the ring. And Dusty Rhodes, brother, I hope you live through it, brother. Because if by chance you ever get that wheel operating again, you remember Ric Flair and the Andersons don't like people sticking their nose in their own personal business.
World heavyweight champion, next
year, boy. I hate to say it, but he should have left you there for the Russians.
David, you know what I like about you? You always have something nice to say about me.
That's right.
But next time you have an opportunity, talk to your accountant and look who built the building you guys' office in. Woo!
Okay, we're back for the second part of the show. We'll jump right into the mailbag again. This is from, where's my name here? I swore I just saw it. From Travel, a regular correspondent to the show. And Travel says, talking about our last show, said, I listened to the show today and had some comments. First, as to your board response, I do not and never have postage on the message forum. I do read it a couple times a week, see what people are saying, so I'm familiar with what you're doing. Having individual threads for the show is terrible. You get a couple comments and it gets lost in the shuffle. When you had one, quote, mega thread, you could have ongoing discussion, stream of thought, random banter, etc. Also, people would know what thread to look for. When you post a new show thread, it is on page 20 with different new show threads. It's hard to find at times. See, Travel, I agree with you totally. That was a Brian Alvarez idea. And so I bow to his wishes. He is, in fact, the boss, and I want to be a good model employee. And so I did that. But I agree with you, and I'm going to, probably petition to let me go back to doing it that way. I understand his reasonings for wanting to do that. They make sense, but I'm not so sure it makes sense for me. But again, he's the boss, and I try to do whoever I work for, I try to do to the best of my ability what they want. My ego is not virtually non-existent. I'm going to try my best to please everybody and us all work together. So he has his reasons, and I've stuck to those. But I myself would like to see it go back to one thread. It's not a big thing in the scheme of things. Travel goes on to say, Brian's feedback is not right for you. His shows are current news and reviews, so individual threads are fine. Your stuff we can discuss anytime and anywhere. Go back to the mega thread so you can re-engage the board members. Part of your charm is the interactive nature. A long thread that people can look for every day and add to suits you better. Well, thank you for that. Mailbags engage people. Biographies are awesome, but most people will not bother emailing you about them. So it's obvious why you're not getting as much email these days. Please, bringing back the mailbag will start to re-engage people. And Travel, that's exactly what I've observed since I started, as I got quite a few. And please keep them coming. Again, Carl at DragonKingCarl.com. I suggested to you in another email to do a rotation between mail and bio and storytelling so you could at least have one mailbag a month. If you're going full-time to the mailbag again, that is really good, too. The biographies will probably be fairly slow up to July because I'm kind of, holding those back for July taping ahead, and so the biographies will be pretty spotty, unless, of course, there's a death or somebody majorly in the news. Obviously, I'm going to try to do a biography on those people, but most of them I'm saving up for July right now. There's not really a theme for this July other than people I want to do a biography on. So that's going to be your theme, is just 31 people that I thought of that day and did a show on. So, all right, Travel goes on to say, perhaps you could do this. Record biographies and storytelling throughout the year, release one a month, and do the rest mail. And then give us 31 shows in July as a marathon. So, yeah, you were thinking right up my alley there. Travel goes on to say, as for your thoughts about how the 80s and 70s are more popular than the Monday Night Wars, here's what I think. The Monday Night Wars have been covered in excruciating detail. And what he's talking about here is when I try to move this time frame we seem stuck on forward and include like Monday Night Wars and stuff like that, feedback just dies. It seems like the listeners of this show just ain't having no part of Attitude Era or NWO or even ECW First Generation. Like, they want to hear about the 80s, and that's the main thing I get asked about. And so just trying to be more relevant and trying to move forward, I try to do that from time to time, but surprisingly have met with little responses. So that's what Travel is responding to here, and I think he's got a good idea about it. It says, the Monday Night Wars have been covered in excruciating details. How many shoots, interviews have each of the major players done? The dead horses have been beaten to the point that the horses are extinct. So I just think people don't have that many questions about that era anymore. And there's a certain magic to 1980s jobber WWE and the 70s and 80s territory era that will never come back. Something that we will never see again brings up more interest and emotion and memories. And so, yeah, great. I think you're right on. Okay, now switching thoughts, Travel says, Jim Lundos, was he really the biggest draw of all time? I don't think one crowd of 100,000 makes him that. Heck, if the Silver Dome held 150,000, Andre and Hogan would have filled that building. People laugh at Vince faking the 93,000, but the reality of the time is they sold every seat available and would have sold more. So I don't think Mr. Lundo should be judged on one big crowd. Could he have filled 50 to 20,000 seat arenas 50 times a year in multiple countries? Hogan, Bruno, and some of the 1960s and 70s NWA World Champions could have done that. I think that makes him bigger draws than Lundos. So thank you very much, Travel. But I think Lundos did that. I think Lundos didn't just draw the one big crowd. He did draw big crowds all over for a pretty long period of time. But again, I don't want to get too deep on that because I want some actual facts and figures in front of me. And so I want to dig up some stuff on Lundos attendance records, because I know they're out there, I've seen them, and actually look at how often he did draw big crowds, and let's see what the reality behind that is. So some good, very good points from our friend Travel there. Let's see here. This is from Brian. Ironically enough, I didn't even read this email till I'd already talked about it. Brian from Delaware, one of our longtime contributors, says, how about an update on what tech you're into? Apple Watch, boo, question mark, smartphone, computer stuff, websites, heard good things about the Amazon Echo. And I promise you I didn't read that email before I got it right now. So, yes, obviously the Amazon Echo is my latest new gadget, and I'm really loving. Brian does have a more in-depth question, though. He says, I know this isn't probably politically correct, but is it okay that I have less than no interest in women's wrestling? None. I know everyone's saying that Sasha and Becky are like Flair and Steamboat, but it simply doesn't interest me. I might be able to get into the Japanese-style women's wrestling, but when it comes to the U.S. version, I couldn't care less. And no, Brian, I don't think it has anything to do with political correctness or not. I think it has everything to do with how it's been promoted here in the U.S., not just recently, but forever. I mean, there's a huge history of... Okay, women's mixed martial arts was not even a thing that existed until a few years ago. Yet when a very skilled female wrestler in Ronda Rousey came along, it became super popular because it was treated equally. It was not treated as, oh, and here's the girls out to roll around for your amusement. It was treated as every bit as seriously as Conor McGregor or whoever the big UFC stars are now. In fact, sometimes they were even booked over the top of the men, and rightfully so. They were equally treated, and they were very good, skilled, and competent, and it wasn't treated as a sideshow attraction. Women's wrestling doesn't have that same history. Women's wrestling was always treated as a sideshow. It was treated, it was categorized. Now, I'm not saying this to belittle it. I'm saying this because it's factually true. Wrestling promoters promoted women's wrestling in the same category as little people wrestling and freak show attraction, that once every couple months they would bring in, quote, the girl wrestlers, their terminology, not mine, to have a match. And it was viewed as lowest common denominator stuff. It was viewed as a comedy match, even if they played it straight, even if the women were, back then especially, nothing to look at and covered from head to toe. It was a gimmick match, and it was treated as such. Lou Thesz, in the great NWA World Champion, famously would not compete on shows that involved women or little people. Wouldn't do it. Felt it was demeaning to him and the championship to be on the same show as this carny stuff. And so that was the world of women's wrestling up until really the Monday Night Wars era. And WWE, and also to their credit or discredit, I suppose, depending on how you look at it, WCW, realized, you know, instead of getting these grandma-looking, fabulous moolah, you know, unitard-wearing, you know, boring as watching grass grow women's wrestlers to come in once a month to just for something different, let's get attractive women to dance and bring in, you know, the sexual attraction to it. And Nitro had the Nitro girls as like cheerleaders. Same thing football had done for many years. WWE was in their real raunchy, you know, attitude era stuff. So they start going way out there with some of their basically, you know, softcore pornography stuff that they were doing over there. And that run its course, and people started saying, you know, hey, look, you know, we're getting upwards of the 2000s now. Come on. Could we have maybe just a little bit more class with this? And so I'm really not sure who started becoming kind of more bringing more respect to like women's wrestling. I'm still not really sure it gets all that much respect, but started it. I want to say Trish Stratus, but she did so much demeaning stuff too. Maybe Lita, that started kind of turning the corner. But remember now, all these women still had to look a certain way. They still had to be fitness models or magazine cover models. They had to be somebody they could put on the cover play. These weren't athletic, you know, good athletes. They were there first and foremost and primarily for their looks. And secondarily, if we can get a decent match out of them, great. Finley got a lot of praise for training these women and making them at least athletically plausible, and so good for him. And that's when a lot of that started. I really think it's at the best place it's been in maybe our lifetime right now. You know, you've got Bayley, who is very popular. She is not, you know, in your classic sense, you know, a cover model girl. She's not being promoted based solely on what she looks like. She's being promoted because, you know, young females identify with her. She seems to be happy and energetic, and it's not about her looks. And I think that's great, and it would be even more wonderful if we could continue that direction. I've never been a lick interested in women's wrestling. Even the stuff that really gets so much of the praise, the 1990s All Japan women's stuff, 1980s, 90s All Japan women's stuff, I couldn't care less about it. And I don't know what that says about me. I don't know if that says anything about me other than it's just not my thing. So, I'm kind of with you. I don't think it's something you should apologize for. If anything, it's something wrestling should be ashamed of how they treated it to make it that way. And I'm not sure it's even really where it needs to be. I just look and see what MMA has done with women's mixed martial arts in just a short period, in less than 10 years, and see how they have made it relevant and on equal footing with the men. While there's not as many, the ones that are there are being treated respectfully and equally, and I think that's great. I think that's wrestling could certainly learn a lesson from it and certainly try to apply that promotional model to what they're doing. Okay, we'll hit one more question, and then we'll get out of here. And again, if I didn't get to your question this time, I will get to it. Again, I'm trying to build up enough to do two or three shows off of before I don't want to drain the mailbag down. So again, Carl at DragonKingCarl.com is where you send your questions for the email, for the mailbag. This is from, they didn't use a name, so I won't identify this person. Says, hello, Carl. I really got confused if you were talking about who is the biggest draw on Canadian soil or who is the biggest draw in Canadian-born wrestler. And actually, we were talking about both in general. This person says, let me address both of them. The biggest draw on Canadian soil has to be Hulk Hogan. He has some huge drawing events that were solely on him and his drawing power, such as the big event and WrestleMania 6. And back in the 80s, house shows with Hulk were drawing 10 to 15,000 a night across the country. Most of the other big draws in Canadian history were in a territory. Montreal would be the big one, and not national. Bret Hart, when he was main eventing as champion, was when WWF was drawing poorly in Canada. He was really only over in Calgary, and the rest of the country didn't care too much about him until the Survivor Series screw job. Only WWF was able to book large buildings in most of Canada, so big draws in Montreal were not translating elsewhere in the country. Hogan nails this one in a landslide. As for the biggest drawing Canadian wrestler, that one has to be our good friend Gene Kaniski. He drew worldwide in main events for almost 20 years, specifically in the 1960s, he was a guaranteed full house anywhere on the planet. Bret, again, only drew big as a main eventer for a short period of time, say about a year before the Survivor Series and a bit after. Many large crowds later in Bret's career were more brand-driven than people paying to see him specifically. You might be able to make a case for Abdullah the Butcher, as he was a big draw worldwide as well, but I'm not so sure if you can attribute him to big crowds when he was generally not the main event or ever a world champion. There's also probably a case for Roddy Piper, but on a worldwide basis, he was part of the WWF and not the main draw. He was a huge draw in territories like Portland. However, this pales to a world champion like Gene Kaniski. Also, some may be able to make a case for Ivan Koloff to be in the discussion. He was a legitimate worldwide draw as well. I put him a notch below Gene, as he was not a long-term world champion of a worldwide promotion. Now, if you combine the two and say biggest drawing Canadian-born wrestler on Canadian soil, then it is by default likely Bret Hart. Gene Kaniski and Ivan Koloff and Abdullah the Butcher did most of their prime drawing power in the USA and worldwide. So it's good points, and again, the debate's open for anyone else with differing views. Again, I'd like to know how the Rougeaus fit into this. Ivan Robert. I don't know, but I think that's probably pretty close to definitive what you've just said there. Okay, so let's call it a show right there. And so if I didn't get to your email question today, and I still have looks like quite a few there, I will get to those coming up on the next show. If you'd like to send in a question, please do. Like to follow up on any of these things we've just talked about, please feel free to do that as well. The email address again for the show is carl@dragonkingcarl.com. It's Carl letter K, K-A-R-L at dragonkingcarl.com. I am Dragon King Carl on Twitter. Facebook is Dragon King Radio. And again, hey, if you're interested, if you've ever thought about the Amazon Echo, please use the link. It's right at the top of the page. Can't miss it. It's that simple. If you can type Amazon.com, you can just as easily type DragonKingCarl.com and hit mine. It doesn't cost you any more. It takes you to the product page. It tells you all about it. And even if you're not thinking about getting one right this minute, just go ahead and click my link and bookmark that where it goes. And then when you do decide to buy one, buy it from that link, and it helps me out. Again, they're Amazon's giving in-house bonuses for selling those. So, you know, if I sell a few of them, it will certainly greatly help my website. So I would really appreciate it. And so we'll get out of here. And thanks a lot for listening. We'll be back soon with another show.
One man is the most honored athlete in Federation history.
Rep the Hitman Hart, the only two-time Intercontinental Champion, two-time Tag Team Champion, and two-time World Wrestling Federation Champion.
Best there is, best there was, and the best there ever will be.
The other, the leader of the new generation.
Big Daddy Cool Diesel, the only man in World Wrestling Federation history to win all three titles in 1 year.
Their previous encounters were marred by injustice.
Look, it's like a carnage. It's like a back alley gang fight.
But this time, the laws have changed.
No count-outs. No disqualification. No time limit.
The match can only terminate in a pinfall or submission.
The champion.
I'm going to take care of you once and for all. We're going to find out who's the best.
The challenger.
The excellence of execution is going to bring you down.
Diesel, the truck stops here.
The title.
I know that you got that belt, and it belongs to me.
I've got something you want,
but it's dear to me too.
The Survivor Series.
I don't like your eyes.